I'm only one of 1,000 people in the country that have founded a billion-dollar company. If you invested $5,000 with me in 1982, it was worth $2 million 15 years later. I set big, hairy, crazy, audacious goals. I am so much a risk taker. I walk the tightrope of insanity. But Adam, when you start out and you're competing against your own name and your own system, you have to be almost stark raving mad to believe that you can do it.
Top leaders, meaningful conversation, actionable advice, bulldoze complacency, ignite inspiration, create impact. Produced by Southwestern Family of Companies. This is the Action Catalyst.
Are you interested in advertising with the Action Catalyst? Our listeners could be hearing about your brand right here, right now. For details, shoot us an email at info@theactioncatalyst.com.
Welcome back, Action Catalyst listeners. I am your host, Adam Outland, and today I'm pleased to welcome John Hewitt, the Hewitt in Jackson Hewitt Tax Service, the second largest tax service in the United States, which was founded in 1982. Afterwards, John also founded Liberty Tax Service, which is the third largest tax preparation service provider in the United States. Since exiting both companies, John has authored the fascinating book, I Compete, and now acts as the CEO of Loyalty Brands, which we will hear more about a little bit later. John, good to meet you.
You too. My pleasure.
But reading up on your background a little bit more, and at first I was like, oh, wow, he grew up in Hamburg in Greece. I was like, well, he's really traveled the world. And then I read the clues were smaller towns in New York, right?
Yeah, my girlfriend now lives in Italy, Texas.
Italy, Texas?
Yes. About 35 miles south of Dallas.
So you tell all your friends you're going to Italy.
Right, exactly.
They ask you to bring back some wine, and you say, I don't know if you want wine from Italy, Texas.
Exactly.
You've accomplished so much, and a lot of your story, I think, starts with working for H&R Block. Was it while you were still at university or when you...
Yep, I was attending the University of Buffalo, and I took a tax course for H&R Block. You know, I've always been self-confident, if not cocky. And when I was in high school, I decided I'm going to be a millionaire. I had no clue how. My major was mathematics, and my dad interceded. And he was always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but had too many children too quickly, and we were too poor. But he called up H&R Block in 1969 and said, we'd like to buy a franchise in Hamburg, New York. And they said, well, as a matter of fact, we're going to open a company store there this year. We already have it. It's right on Main Street. And it was life-changing. One of the biggest blessings of my life is when I was 20 years old, I found out what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Not many people can say that.
You know what? Most people don't know if they're 20, 30, 40, 50. Most people don't know what they want to be when they grow up.
Yeah. Vision is lacking for a lot of people. And so they find themselves drawn to other people's visions, which I guess is okay.
It's okay for people like me that have vision. I need people like that.
That's right. Yeah.
Every industry needs CEOs and visionaries, and I've always been a crazed competitor. You know, it's with me, it's show me a good loser, and I'll show you a loser. So I've always had this fanatical, obsessive desire to win. And so whatever I did, I learned something when I was about 17 to solve arguments because I'm so argumentative. And my friends and I would be listening on the car radio, and a song would come on. And I'd say it was the Moody Blues. They'd say it was Three Dog Night. And we'd argue and no one would win, right? So I invented a game that I played to this day that I'll bet you a doubt. You have to either have to stop arguing or bet a doubt. And so I bet like $1 million in my lifetime. I only bet one at a time. I don't bet $10 or $50. Yeah, I'm incredibly competitive. In 1980... I became a regional director, and I foolishly, 10 years earlier, said, that's my dream, is to be a H&R Block regional director. And I foolishly set that goal, and I made it. And I was so excited, and then my dad, he took me down a notch. He said, John, I'm going to computerize taxes, and I want you to join me. It took him 6 months to convince me, but finally he convinced me, and we both quit our jobs, and in 1981, we built the first tax software for an Apple computer.
Huh. What was it that made you feel that you guys would be good business partners and that would work out?
Well, as a teenager, I mean, my dad and I fought like cats and dogs. I mean, he wouldn't talk to me for months on end. I was just so rebellious. And my rebellion it wasn't drugs or crazy stuff. It was, I wanted to hang out with my girlfriend. So I'd sneak out at night and hang out with my girlfriend. But he wanted someone that would obey the rules. In my career, I've had my mom work for me, my dad, my sisters, my ex-wife, my children, my nieces, and I've had lots of people work, but not everyone worked out well. I had to fire my ex-wife, fire one of my daughters, and fire one of my sons. So not everyone worked out well, but it was so bonding with my dad and I. It took him from this rebellious teenager. I had 45 years with him where we were almost best friends, that we had something in common. He was partners with me in building the software. He was on the board of directors of Jackson Hewitt. He was on the board of directors of Liberty Tax. And when it came to business, he always gave in to me. But in every other phase of his life, our lives, he would not pay any attention to me.
Wow. And from there, how did you decide that franchise was the route you wanted to go?
We started with 6 offices in August of 82. By January, we had 11. So we bought 6 offices from Mel Jackson's widow, changed the name to Jackson Hewitt, and had 11 offices. Then the second year, we had 15. And the third season, we had 22. So in 2.5 years, we had gone from 6 to 22. So that's pretty good growth. But my goal from day one was to have more offices than H&R Block. And they had 9,000. And I realized I'd be like 600 years old by the time I got to 9,000 at that rate. So we immediately start change. I decided we're going to franchise. We need H&R Block at franchise. And we exploded. We went from 22 to 49 to 197 to 350. So we exploded with franchise. Adam, the beauty of franchising that no one ever talks about, because I think they feel guilty, is I get someone like yourself, a very talented person, and you pay me to work for me. I mean, if I went out in the marketplace and had to hire you, I'd have to pay you hundreds of thousands of dollars. But you pay me, I get a great person like yourself who wants to change their life, and you pay me to work for me. So that's almost a scam, except for I've made 1,000 billionaires. And my 5,000 franchises have hundreds of thousands of employees. I've changed tens of thousands of people's lives.
In a form, what you offer, I feel, and you can correct me, is when you buy into a franchise, you're buying into, in some way, especially in the early days, coaching and direct mentorship. You're paying for the systems and the organization to say this is the value proposition that you're buying into. And there is a hunger, I think, for a lot of successful people to have that kind of mentorship and guidance and tools. Because they're motivated, but they prefer a little bit of a shortcut on the learning curve, right?
It's a huge shortcut. It saves years and years.
Years, yeah. Because you hit those potholes, so they didn't necessarily have to.
I either made every mistake or I've seen every mistake. A couple of times, we almost went bankrupt. One year, I had an opportunity. We were growing by leaps and bounds. And remember, our number one goal was to be bigger than the 9,000 H&R Blocks. And there was a company in the country that had about 250 locations, and they decided to offer tax. Well, they had a relationship with a company called Montgomery Ward, which also doesn't exist anymore, which is a miniature Sears. And they offered to sell us the Montgomery Ward contract. Well, I had just hired my two favorite people from H&R Block that were running 300 offices, and I had just done an offering and raised money, and it would make us immediately that year, 6 years after we started, we'd be number two largest in the country. And so we didn't do enough due diligence, but we bought that relationship. And we opened in about 150 Montgomery Wards. Well, come to find out, they had had a horrible season, and they treated the taxpayers all over the country. And these countries, they were in like 27th state. So we went from 3 states to 27 states. And they had such a bad year the previous year, they hadn't paid their preparers. So the preparers were angry with them they didn't, either they quit. Some of them, a couple situations, they competed so mean and miserably that they would come into the Montgomery Ward, because these were little kiosks in a Montgomery Ward. They would come in and recruit the customers right from under our nose and said, I'm over, you know, I've been doing your tax returns for 3 years. I'm over here. Come to me. So we had to go to Montgomery Ward and say, we have to shut down 100 of these locations. We're getting killed. We almost went bankrupt.
Wow.
I took zero pay, and many people took a 50% pay cut, but we came out of it very robustly, bigger and stronger than ever.
What was the number one lesson that taught you?
Don't roll out anything on a national level. If you're going to test anything, do it regionally, a small test before you go. Take it out and do it nationally.
But in your position, you know, would you say that your risk tolerance is relatively high?
I say it's off the charts high. Adam, think about it. We had 6 stores, and I went to my investors and said, our goal is to be bigger than H&R Block. Now, my word is my bond. We only got to 6,000. Jacksonville had 6,000 locations, but it became a billion-dollar company. I'm only one of 1,000 people in the country that have founded a billion-dollar company. We didn't get to 9,000, but everyone made a lot of money. If you invested $5,000 with me in 1982, it was worth $2 million 15 years later. So I had no investors that were disappointed. But yeah, I set big, hairy, crazy, audacious goals. I am so much a risk taker. I walk the tightrope of insanity.
So when you did kind of a repeat of this again.
Yeah, exactly. When I sold Jackson Hewitt, then I started Liberty Tax. And now when my non-compete ended, I had to compete with my own name, my own software, my own system, and my own people. And now Jackson Hewitt had 6,000 offices and H&R Block had 9,000. Guess what goal we set? To be bigger than Block. And again, I didn't get to 9,000. I only got to 4,000. I did it 5 times quicker than I did it at Jackson Hewitt. I formed another $500 million company. I formed, again, one of the top 100 largest retail chains in the country. I'm the only one that's founded 2 of the top 100 retail chains. But Adam, when you start out and you're competing against a 9,000 chain and a 6,000 chain, and the 6,000 chain has your own name and your own system, you have to be almost stark raving mad to believe that you can do it.
What phase of business building are you most attracted to? The early stages where you have to be kind of scrappy, or do you like the large scale sweeping side of it once you've gotten to scale?
It gets boring to me when we stop growing by, when we're not growing by leaps and bounds. You know, the culture in your organization is critical to the quality of your organization. And it's so much easier to have a great culture when you're growing exponentially. If you ever get to a vantage point where they're not growing, they're flat, right? To me, if you're not growing, you're dying. That's not my leadership skill. I'm a builder and a fighter, and I'm a scrapper, as you said. But no, once it gets to, I'll turn it over to the suits at that point. You guys take over.
Yeah.
If it's not growing double digits or more, or 50%, if it's not growing by over 10%, don't even waste my time. I've got better things to do.
And so because you were, again, bored at your enormous amounts of success that you had, you decided to start something new again.
Yep, after I sold Liberty Tax, then we started Loyalty Brands. Yep. In each of the first 2 iterations at Jackson Hewitt and Liberty, there was just 1 franchisor. At Loyalty, we have 8 different franchisors, and we're exploring some new concepts and between the brands. We're exploring mentorship. I can mentor CEOs of each brand. We're exploring my vast array of people around both the United States and Canada who believe in John Hewitt, who have either worked with me at Block or Jackson Hewitt or Liberty. So when we go to a city, when we go to Houston, there are hundreds of people that have worked with me that believe in me. So they could be a customer, they could be an employee, they could be a franchisee. So we're exploring that opportunity. Simplistically, it's just an umbrella company of 8 different franchisors. So instead of standalone franchisor like a Jackson Hewitt or a Liberty, we have ATAX and we have Zoom and Grumman and we have Inspection Boys, Home Inspection. And we have eight different companies instead of just one franchisor. I've been always disappointed in organizations like Berkshire Hathaway that couldn't cross market. You know, they have a stable of great companies, Coke, Geico, but to my knowledge, they don't ever get the two groups to cross market. You know, how many people at Geico drink Coke and how many people at Coke buy car insurance? You would think there would be some attempt at cross marketing, but they do nothing.
And what's the vision going forward for Lowell?
Well, the vision has something to do with my age. I'm 74 years old, and I'm going to work forever. They got to kill me to stop me. But I don't think I have energy to go more than another 5 or 6 years in eight brands. I think that we're going to get down to just one or two industries over the next 5 or 6 years. So, and that's more related to my age than to any other business reason. So we'll sell off the lesser performers or the ones that I don't enjoy as much. And then they'll still have the management that I put there, that they'll still have access to the mentorship. But my focus is going to be just on one or two different industries. There's no retirement. Again, they got to kill me to stop me. When I was young, I said, you know what? I'm going to be a millionaire. Don't know how, but I'm going to be that. And you know what? I'll have the greatest life. I'll just go and retire. And I'll be 20s or 30s, and I'll just have this greatest life. And I realized along the way, what would I do? I mean, I don't like fishing. I don't like golfing. I don't like sitting. I like fast, ADHD, fast, go, 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 changing lives. But I enjoy business and helping people more than anything else I do.
I love that mindset. Often leaders are asked to share their best advice they ever received, but I kind of want to flip that question and ask you, what's some of the worst advice that you've ever received?
Wow. The worst advice that I ever received. There's a bunch of statements that I really despise. And one of them is, that's the way we've always done it, right? I've always been at the cusp of creativity in my industry and in thought. And the people that, the dumbest advice I ever saw written maybe was the head of the U.S. Patent Office, 1899. He wrote, "We might as well shut down the patent office, because everything that can be invented has already been invented." And this was in 1899. I mean, just the human beings' inability to improve and be committed to improve and change and just fighting tooth and nail. You know, one of our 10 principles is improve each day. And one year, I had a sort of an epiphany, and I went to each of my leaders at their year-end review, and I said, "How do you improve last year?" It was sorry. It was a sorry state. It was like, I read two books and nothing about change of behavior. And change is so hard for people. And it's not the change that's hard. It's the pain of change. Everyone I know, virtually every person I know, if I say to them, "Do you want to change? Do you want to improve?" They'll say, "Of course I want to improve, of course. But don't ask me to change. Don't ask me to get up earlier. Don't ask me to eat different. Don't ask me to exercise different. Don't ask me to think different. Of course I want to improve. Just don't ask me to change." You know, if you do what you always did, you get what you always got. Doing the same thing and expecting different results is the definition of insanity.
Yeah, I love that one. And everything you just said about coming back to the original answer to your question, that one of the worst things for you to hear is, "Well, that's the way we've always done it." And I feel like that even points back to when you approached HR Block originally with the software you designed and said, "Hey, you guys should use this." And I'm imagining the response was something like, "Well, this is the way we've always done it."
Yeah, in that annual report, they said, people ask us why we don't computerize. Why should we? Customers don't care. it doesn't save us any money. We're never going to computerize. How could they be so inane to say we're never going to computerize?
Right.
I can see, okay, we're not going to computerize next year, right, but we're never going to computerize. How stupid is that?
Yeah, that's good. And then what's a habit or practice that you feel has saved you the most time each day or made you more efficient?
I'm like the world's best at that. I'm more jealous of time than any human being you ever meet. So if someone sends me a question, I'll say why or n. I won't bother. I won't bother sending a long answer. And if someone makes the mistake of sending me an or question, do you want to do it on Monday or Tuesday? I always say to irritate them and to get them to change, I always say why. You know, do you want to meet on Monday or Tuesday? I'll say why. Not yes, but why? And so now they got to come back. So my people, I tried changing for a little while, like Monday or Tuesday. I put one if I meant Monday and two if I meant Tuesday, but some people couldn't figure it out. So when my staff sends me an email about when do I want to meet one Monday or two Tuesday? So I only have to type in one letter. And I don't, the biggest savings is I don't talk on the telephone. It's almost impossible to get me to talk on the telephone. Now, when I say that, I'm exaggerating a little. I talk on the phone maybe once or twice a day, but I hate chit-chat. I'm horrible at chit-chat. I mean, let's get down to business. Let's talk. I don't really care how. I mean, I try to be nice and how's your family and how's your child and how's your spouse, but I'm not good at it. Well, let's get down to business. So not talking on the telephone and answering questions very succinctly is my style. And so if you send me an email, it could be 100 words. It was almost impossible for you to get more than 10 words back. I learned a valuable experience with people that just like to vomit talk. I mean, I've had a couple of employees. One woman followed me to the door of the bathroom. A couple times she followed me to the car, and she'd be talking. I'd be shutting the door and driving away. And I realized that they're so used to they're the rude ones, and they're so used to it that it doesn't bother them. That didn't offend them at all. The next day, they were the same way, talking too much. Time is the only irreplaceable resource. You can replace gold and diamonds and everything. You can't replace time.
Mm. Last question to end with all this experience behind you, if you had the opportunity to sit down across the table with the 21-year-old version of yourself, What advice would you give that 21-year-old version?
Yeah, one of the ways that I'm different than other people, I never worry about what if. I never go back and think about it. I mean, because let's say I give myself the greatest advice in the world and went out and got hit by a bus. So I don't have any advice. I'll give this advice to every 21-year-old. Find something you like to do, work hard, persevere. Life's too short. And Monday morning, if you're going to work and not looking forward to it, you're going to the wrong place. So that's the advice I would give each and every 21-year-old. I don't ever think about what if I had done something different. So find something you love to do, work hard, persevere.
Great interview, great anecdotes. You wrote the book, I Compete. And if people wanted to follow your journey or stay in contact with you in some way, what would be the best way for listeners to do that?
Well, first of all, I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook, and they can get my book for free. I will send it to them for free. Just send me john@loyaltybrands.com, and I'll send them a free book.
I'll take you up on that. That's great. I really enjoyed this conversation interview with you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
If you enjoy this podcast, please make sure to subscribe. And to stay updated on everything that the Action Catalyst is up to, make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Action Catalyst Podcast and on Twitter @catalyst_action. And thanks for listening.